All right. How many of you remember these things? Yeah? So what's up, beautiful people? Good morning. I mean, is everybody even awake? Okay. Let's see. Let's time for some honesty here. All right. So if I say, hey, what's up? And this is the response that I get when I ask how you feeling today, and you do that, and you're asking your neighbor if you've, yeah, good morning, yeah, have you had your coffee, have you had your tea? Anybody have breakfast this morning? Okay. Okay, so if I say, hello, good morning, what's up, beautiful people? God is good. This is not the response I should get. So, as everybody has already said, my name is Warren Snipe. You can call me Wawa. If you know sign language, I have a cultural name sign that looks like what I just showed you. My daughter, Regina, Dr. Regina Daniels just introduced me. So, for a long time, I have been a traveler and a performer. And today I'd like to share how I came to Christ. You just saw this music video. And praise the Lord, right? But at that point, I was still a baby Christian. I had just given my life to Christ. I was actually born and raised Jewish. Yeah. My family was in Jewish culture. I'm from Philly, born and raised. And in that area, not many people signed. I really didn't use sign language until I was in college in Washington, D.C. Growing up in Philadelphia, I didn't even know about Jesus. Didn't know who he was. And to be honest, I didn't even understand the Jewish culture that I was raised in because everybody spoke and I couldn't understand it. And in a Jewish context, they use both Hebrew and English. So in that community, we had blacks, we had Asians, we had multicultural, and it was great. And many people have this assumption that people of color can't be Jewish. Well, let's break that. They can, but they're often unseen. It's more of a taboo topic, if you will, for one of us to come out as saying that they are Jewish, because we get that response. No, you're black, you can't be Jewish. But Christians accept any. Well, Jews do too. So, getting back to my story, like I said, I was in Philly, I was exposed to the gang life, and went through a lot of struggles, and I had to fight for my rights. And I also thought that I might be the only deaf Jewish person. I didn't think there was anybody else like me. And it stayed that way until I went to college. At my college, there was a Jewish club, and I was able to join it. And people were surprised when I said that I was Jewish. They didn't think that I could because I'm black. They're like, oh, you're just a wannabe. Like Sam Davis Jr., like grandfather, or Whoopi Goldberg, right? Nah, you're not real Jewish, they told me. But here I am trying to give my history and my story, saying, actually, no. I went through the Jewish customs. I had a bar mitzvah. But still, they were skeptical. And they tried to give me a little credit, so they let me join their club. Even though they let me in, they never accepted me. They kind of put me in the back, left me out. And I knew that that wasn't as important as my relationship with my God. And feeling lonely for me truly wasn't anything new. So that experience fit in with my history. During the Jewish holidays, if you're familiar with Passover, the high holidays, you know there's a lot of customs in Jewish culture. And that club would say, you can come, but you don't have to. And I would say, it's the high holidays. But people didn't understand what I did. I had to fight to be recognized, fight to belong in that Jewish club. And they have a temple that you go to, typically Shabbat, you know, Friday night through Saturday, sundown to sundown. And everybody noticed how much I stood out and wondered why I was there. They didn't think it was possible for me to be Jewish. And they even got that from the rabbi. The rabbi said that I wasn't Jewish. The rabbi said I couldn't be Jewish. So several times I would leave. Until one person, one woman, stood up for me and believed that God is for all people. So the rabbi typically had good sermons, which I was able to access and I appreciated. But you know, sometimes after service, when the preacher stands by the door and says goodbye to everybody, well, my temple back there had that as well. And I was excited to meet the rabbi as we were leaving. And as soon as I got up to him, he walked away. I got a look from him that I'll never forget. For 4 months, I put up with that treatment. But in the Jewish community, I really didn't have people to stand up for me. They left me on their own. And I'm not saying that I hate the Jewish community. No, some were great, but I had a really bad experience with that rabbi. So after that 4th month of putting up with this, I decided to, you know, get my determination up and truly pursue a time together one-on-one with him. And I had to work through my own forgiveness, because the Jewish community does talk about forgiveness and what it feels like sometimes. If it benefits them, I would say. So that day, when I got in line, and the rabbi was about to look away from me again, I had had it. I took him by the arm. And for those of you that don't know, you're not supposed to touch the rabbi. Typically, you just wave. They have the anointed clothing, right? So, the floodgates opened, but I didn't care. I grabbed him by the arm. I said, hey, look at me. And that was my attitude. People were shocked. They look, you know, the image here, right? Big black guy with a Jewish rabbi. Looks like I'm wanting to beat him up, but I wasn't. But he took a close look at my arm on his, and I said, hey, I've been coming to your services. I wanted to thank you. I wanted to talk to you, but every time I get to you, you turn away. And he stopped me. He cut me off. He said, I don't believe your people can be become our people. They're not supposed to. Talk about a jarring experience. I walked out of that temple. People wanted to talk to me. I wasn't having it. And I swore. I screamed at God. I said, "That's it. Just you and me. If anybody else wants to talk about who I am, who I can be, I've had enough." So I stopped going. I was so angry. I told my mom about it, and they tried to console me, but, you know, I had done my time. That was it. So for many years, it was just me and God. I learned by myself, but to be honest, I just kind of stopped pursuing it. I had my time alone with God, and that was it. Kind of treated God like a genie, if you will. And often we do that, right? We only talk to him when we need something. Like you're rubbing the lamp. As if, as soon as we ask for it, he gives us three wishes. But no. We have no patience, right? We want instant gratification. So, in general, when we say, "Hey, God, I need $50,000, you give it to me," and we're waiting around, and we're saying, "Hey, God, you're supposed to provide for your children," and God's looking at you and kind of laughing. It's like, do you know who you're talking to? Do you remember who made this world? Do you know who created this? It just, you know. But that's how I looked at God then. That's how I talked to him for many years. And then I met my queen. Well, okay, I call my wife my queen, just so you know. Don't want any confusion here. If ever I say queen, I'm talking about my wife. Before I met her, I was in a friend's wedding. I was just there to observe and enjoy. And in the back of my mind, I was like, "Hey, God, can you get me someone that I enjoy being around? Someone who might get you a little bit." It was pretty casual when I talked to him, and I was in Japan at the time. And you know God is everywhere, right? When I had done my work stint in Japan, I'd come back to America, and it was July 1st of 2020. No, that was COVID. 2000, there we go. Get the right year here, not 2020. So it was the year 2000. And I got my flight landed on July 1st, and I flew again July 2nd to go to Wisconsin. At that time, I was involved in a dance group called the Wild Zappers. And of course, coming from Japan, I was still experiencing jet lag. All the time change was still with me. And there was another dance group, Rathskellers. And our two groups met at a festival for Summerfest. And we were there at the same time. And Regina was actually in that dance group. So, guess who introduced us? Hey, matchmaker in the front row here. But it's amazing how God works to answer prayers. Coming from my simple prayer at that wedding, asking God to give me somebody, not realizing that in just a short while later, I would be introduced. And she thought that I was from Wisconsin. I'm like, no, I live in D.C. He's like, oh. She realized that I was a Gallaudet student. But she was a freshman. So I thought, oh no, she's a kid, right? You're kidding me, God. You wanted to introduce me to this amazing woman, but she's a freshman? So, you know, a little time later, we started dancing. It was a nightclub. And we're doing our thing. Hit up two bars, asked her if she wanted anything to drink. She's like, no, I don't drink. And I told her if she didn't drink, I wouldn't either. But she ended up wanting some soda. So we both got ourselves some soda. And here the music's going, the club's hype. And my queen takes a look at me and asks me, do you know why I don't drink? I told her I assumed that maybe she just didn't like it. And she clarified. She said, I'm underage. I don't think that face needs interpretation. So, you know the acronym J-O-B, jail or bail? And I wondered, what am I getting myself into? So again, that was the year 2000. I was in panic mode at the time, right? But I tried to keep my cool. I said, oh, all right. And I asked her how old she was. And she'll be 20 or 21 next year. Here I am, just taking a cool sip. And I said, I'll be 30 this year. Yup, 10 years. Robbing the cradle here. I know. How dare you? Blah, blah, blah. Okay, I get it. And her jaw hit the floor. My mom dated a guy like you. That's what she told me. I'm going to be 30. Her mom's boyfriend was 30, my same age. You're kidding. And of course, right? I was trying to decide jail or bail. At that point, my mind was set on bail. But I liked her company. She was very mature for her age. And, you know, over time, obviously we dated and are now married. But often in scripture, we talk about the concept of marriage and we use the metaphor of a yoke. This queen of mine proposed to me 4 times. Not once, not twice, not thrice, but 4 times. So the first time I didn't decline. She says I did, but I didn't. Kind of said, well, you know, I'm traveling or meeting lots of people. And I was 30 and thought I knew it all. Truly, I was an idiot. But we got through it the second time and then the third time and the fourth time. I was actually already planning to propose myself this time, but then she asked. And as soon as we were engaged, which was amazing, you know, people think when they're engaged, they're not boyfriend or girlfriend anymore. But of course, as soon as you get engaged, guys, you're no longer the shining of the show. Everybody goes to the woman. Let me see your ring, right? And there she goes, trying to show off the bling, right? And for us, because the proposal was untraditional, people were asking me for a ring. I didn't have one. So whether or not the man asked the woman or the woman asked the man, the love is there, right? And I walked around with an engagement ring on, and she didn't have one. And she said, people ask her where it is, and all she would do is hold up her hand and say, I don't know. But when it came time for the wedding, she questioned if she could marry me. I said, what? You proposed to me 4 times and now you don't think you can marry me? What's wrong with this picture? Are you having second thoughts, cold feet? She said, no, because we're not equally yoked. You're Jewish and I'm Christian. Well, that threw me for another loop. I didn't know what to do with that. Like, what the, right? I thought love conquers all. And she agreed. So I said, what does it matter if my background is Jewish? If we love each other, can't we conquer it? But that tagline, love conquers all, is not from Jesus. When I said it, it was interesting how it did have some comparisons with the gospel. And at that point, there were seeds planted in my life that I wasn't aware of to lead me to Christ later. So we did end up getting married. And throughout the years, ended up with our firstborn, our son. She went to church, but of course I didn't. And it felt awkward. It didn't even feel right. But I thought it was okay. They can go to church and I'll do my own thing. I was Jewish, you know. Proud Jewish. But I was curious about the church life, how it was different. And one day my queen asked me, it was Easter, and she asked me if I would go with her to church. I said, yeah, sure. Of course, she didn't believe me at first, so she had to ask again. And I really had never said no to anybody inviting me to church. But I really wasn't interested in being converted, so I was hoping nobody would ask me to convert. But when I got to church, okay, ready? I was Jewish, again, Jewish boy, and also deaf. The pastor had a screen similar to what you have here in the sanctuary, and we had an interpreter on the stage, right here on stage right. Everybody was worshiping, but I had never seen that before. People were singing, people were raising their hands, people were clapping. All I could do was look around and wonder how all these crazy people are here. And they continued, and I continued wondering what's wrong with these people. And then the pastor came up, the senior pastor, and I just want to paint this picture for you. So he's up there preaching, and my wife is beside me, saying, hey, he was Jewish, and he believes in Jesus. And I looked at him like he was a traitor. So for me, as they then talked about how Jesus himself was a Jew, I was interested to learn more. Talked about the Old Testament and the New Testament and how they apply to your life. In the Old Testament, as they were describing it, I could follow along because I had done my own research and knew it fairly well, so everything that they said was right and good. And then the pastor started to go into the New Testament. And I found myself not being able to nod along anymore. Because I didn't know this part of the story. So I had to ask my wife, what are they talking about? And my queen said, I don't know. I'm like, hey, you're a Christian. Shouldn't you know? Well, there was a lot that we had to learn. And the interpreter was there doing their job, but kept looking at me. What are you looking at me for? Because I'm black? Really? What are you looking at me for? But here they were, interpreting to me, it felt like. But at the same time, as afraid as I was, with them intently staring at me, I was engaged. I couldn't focus on anything else other than the message and what this interpreter was saying. It felt like God was using that interpreter to speak directly to me. And when worship was done, I told my wife I'd come again next week. She's like, "You? You want to come next week? Okay." And since that Easter, I have gone every Sunday without fail. Because I have a hunger. The empty void was starting to fill up. But keep in mind, I hadn't quite accepted Christ yet. So Easter to December, right? December rolls around. And it was about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning on a given day. And something woke me up. The first word that came to my head was pray. And I don't know why, but I was struggling at that time. I had questions that needed answering. And keep in mind, right? I went every Sunday. I learned about prayer. I learned about these things. And there was an older man who was Jewish and accepted Christ. And my wife told me about him, that if I had any questions, I could go up to him. I had 4 questions. I had asked those 4 questions to many other people. But this man, when I asked him if he would answer my questions, he sat there like this. And his name was Joe. I said, "Hey, are you Joe?" He said, "Yeah, I am." I said, "Were you a Jew?" Like, "Yep." I said, "Can you answer me a question?" And here he was. "Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Come here." And he told me a story a little bit. And he asked me if I was Jewish. And I said, "Yes." He gave me this smile. That was it. The opposite reaction from what I got when I went to the temple, right? Every time I told them in the temple that I was Jewish, I got the opposition. So this man just smiled and nodded. I didn't know how to take that. And I proceeded to ask him about the New Testament. And I asked him about his journey to accepting Christ, because I needed to know how the Old Testament led into the New Testament. Jewish people need to be saved, but usually in the Old Testament, they would sacrifice a lamb, right? They would put their hands on a lamb, anoint it with oil, and send it out as atonement. But Jesus did that once for all. I didn't realize that the sacrifices of lambs was a part of the Old Testament, and it stopped with Jesus. That Jesus was the perfect lamb. The dots aligned for me. Finally, I understood. That was the missing link that I needed from the Old Testament to the New Testament. And here he was, just like this, smiling. He's like, "What other questions do you have?" Well, here my mind was still processing everything. I said, "Well, I have got many questions, but I forgot the rest. I couldn't remember the 2nd to 4th. That link was so powerful. And later in December, I decided to follow my Lord. But I didn't tell my family. Surprised them. So I said, Lord, thank you for everything, right? Thank you for me being here. I give my life to you. I want to be with you. But yet, I still thought God was two people at the time. So I said, thank you to God. And then I said, thank you to Jesus. So thank you, Jesus, for saving my life. Thank you for, and God, if you punish me, if you need to, that's okay. I'll take it. I don't understand. I know this is your son and forgiveness and all this. But then I would talk to Jesus again. So here I was going between God and Jesus. And I remember one day I was talking with my family and I just casually blurted out that I'd gotten saved. Of course, my family was shocked, right? They're like, wait, what? When? Why didn't you tell us? I didn't think I needed to. I didn't know I needed to. And my wife started crying. My family members started crying. Like, what is wrong with you? Right? I didn't realize the significance behind that decision. And since I've been saved, oh, how much life has changed and how much I've learned. God and Jesus are one. He is the Son of the living God. And as Jewish, I'm a Jewish Christian. It's complete, right? It's a Messianic Jew. So you can be both Jewish and Christian. Let me show you something. Just an example, really quick here. You all know what this is. It's a measuring tape, right? But imagine it was a rope, okay? So ropes can get really long. Imagine a rope that can stretch all the way around the earth, okay? That's a long rope. Now imagine it wrapping around the earth many times, not just once. So, picture with me, if you will, that this is a rope and it's stretching as far as possible. Well, that's the concept of eternity. Your life, about yay big, right? But you know how fast life goes? Well, I didn't expect that to go that slow. There we go. A rope or eternity that is eternal, going on forever. And our lives are this tiny little piece of it. Why do we worry so much? We have those problems way too close to our faces. But God doesn't want us to worry about it. That's something that I wanted to share with you today. Now I want to talk about football. How many like football? All right, you got to be kidding me. Nobody likes sports here? Nobody likes football? Okay, we've got some. Well, I'm a football freak. So, of course, I've been to the Super Bowl twice and have been blessed to perform there. Well, I've got a concept for you. You know a football stadium. At least y'all have seen one. And you know that there are two teams on that football field. You've got Satan's team, who's quarterback, Satan, right? He's got all the linebackers behind him. And then we've got Jesus as the quarterback on the other side with the angels. We got wide receivers, we've got running backs, we've got all these positions. But here we go, two teams. And then you've got the people in the stands. The prayer warriors, those that are supporting you. And we know how important it is in football to keep your eye on the prize. And there are two boxes in that stadium of people that are communicating with the quarterback and seeing everything on the field. This is a representation of your life. Because God is telling Jesus, hey, war needs to go and do this and do that. So, of course, Jesus communicates that, and we're supposed to obey. That's how it's supposed to work. So if he says, run left, I run left. Or if I run right, then I get tackled, right? When we disobey, when we go off track, we know that Jesus is right there, and we get back up again. But keep in mind, you're not where you were before. You've moved. And as soon as the touchdown happens, well, we know. We won the prize. And the whole stadium erupts. This is your life. When I came to Christ, I always ask God for wisdom. So any wisdom that I give to others came from him. But sometimes we'll tell someone something. And sometimes I'll surprise myself by what comes out of my own. But it's not me, it's from God. And I'll have to jot it down because it was true wisdom. The Lord wants to use you in any way. So don't limit him. He is not your genie. He is your God. So we'll struggle. We'll go through stuff. Maybe you are parents. Maybe you will be parents. And parents are typically chasing their kids, right? As soon as the kid falls, they'll help them up. Well, that's our Father in heaven. So if we try to be more like him, imagine what life would be. Train up a child in his way. Right? Thank you so much for me being here.